Roll away the dawn and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty.
Listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Patru.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Horses and men. Horses and men are on the field. They didn't yield. Many have fallen here. Never forget. Never forget what they have done. The time will come when it will change again. Never forget.
Ladies and Paul, are you with me?
I'm with you.
Oh, thank you. Folks, good evening, and thank you for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty this Wednesday. And it is the 30th of May in the year 2007, and a beautiful, glorious weather we've been having here, folks. Our spiritual message this evening is, once again, from the Course in Miracles. And I haven't even read it myself yet. I drew it from my little card box from the text on page 15. In reality, you are perfectly unaffected by all expressions of lack of love. These can be from yourself and others, from yourself to others, or from others to you. Peace is an attribute in you. You cannot find it outside. That would have been enough, wouldn't it, folks? Peace is an attribute in you. You cannot find it outside. And I hope that you're enjoying as beautiful weather as we've been enjoying here. It's just been a real blessing. And I hope that you're gardening, folks. Any one of you, I don't care if you have a little stamp-sized backyard, you could turn your backyard into a garden. We've talked about it. We've had Jeffrey Smith on the air with us explaining the research and the dangers of the genetically modified food, and the fact that today you just don't know what the heck you're getting. Irradiated eggs and meat, and if you can, garden, and you'll love it. Actually, our guest this evening is Paul Von Ward. Paul has been with us a couple of three times. He's the author of the book, God's Genes and Consciousness. And in his book, he made a statement that has stuck with me and will stay with me, that nature is the physical level of reality. You know, for a long time I struggled with that, thinking I was just so earthbound and I needed to be able to let go, et cetera, et cetera. And you can't fake it. If you love it, you love it. And my love for nature and the beauty that is in this world, it's just there. And that was very comforting for me. And Paul Von Ward, thank you for being with us tonight.
Delighted to be with you again,
yeah.
Jackie.
And tonight the topic of our conversation is evidence of reincarnation.
Evidence.
Yep. For reincarnation. And you are in the process of writing a book on that subject, and I am so glad. Folks, usually when I ask Paul to come on, I tell him what I'd like him to talk about, and I ask him to choose the topic tonight, and I'm delighted. And Paul, where do we start? Where would you like to start here?
Well, I think we should start probably at the beginning with just a little bit of a definition of reincarnation.
Okay.
And I'm glad that you opened with that little comment about the earth is the physical plane of nature, the physical manifestation of nature, because you see, nature is everything in the universe. And the whole notion of reincarnation has to be seen, in my view, as a natural phenomenon. It's something that happens to all of us. It's something that is not just reserved for humans. It involves consciousness wherever it is found in the universe. And so reincarnation is just nature's way, in my view, of preserving the knowledge and experiences that we have in a lifetime for future use in the coming generation.
And so I
would go so far as to say that if reincarnation wasn't one of the early design features of the universe that we know, then evolution would have had to create the phenomenon of reincarnation in order not to waste what each of us as individuals accumulate in terms of learning and knowledge and experience and wisdom and insight.
And each time around.
Each time around, and it accumulates. And I think this is what I want to talk about tonight, is how this accumulates, because the evidence for reincarnation is within each of us, starting from the moment we're born, with knowledge, habits, patterns of behavior, insights, memories that we bring with us, so that we don't start the new life as a blank slate. Many of you who've been in school studying, you know, the psychology of development, and you would be familiar with the term that we are a tabula rasa. We are a blank slate, and then society and parents and the community create from this blank slate the people that we are today. And I take the very different point of view that we start this lifetime on the basis of all of those experiences, learning, and insights that we've collected over many lifetimes.
May I ask a question here? Without
absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. When you mention that blank slate,
mm-hmm.
What they're talking about is the brain, not the mind, don't you think, Paul?
Well, no, they're talking about the whole human.
Okay.
In other words, the people who use that term assume that the physical body is and all that we are as people is a lump of clay that has to be molded by experience in this life.
I see.
So, no, when you introduce a dichotomy between brain and mind, you're putting yourself outside of the worldview that talks about a blank slate. You see what I mean?
Well, I guess what I was thinking about is that when an infant, let's say a soul takes a body that is born
right.
into the physical world, that the brain itself is not filled with all the synapses and all that it is the experiences at this time that begins to create that, but the memory we bring with us would be in the subconscious mind. Would you say that?
Well, see, you are already, you are, I'm surprised, actually, to hear you say that. You are already talking about a dualistic point of view.
Okay.
You're already talking about the brain as being something separate from the mind, and that's dualism. You know, that
okay.
goes back to Descartes.
Okay.
That goes back to the notion that we are separated into a dichotomy. And
okay.
what I'm suggesting in reincarnation is that reincarnation is a whole package, and the evidence that we have is that every aspect of our being, which means our physical being, as well as our emotional being, as well as our cognitive or mental being, as well as our personality, as well as many behaviors and skills and habits and knowledge, are all part of that package that comes forward in reincarnation.
Okay.
So the brain and the body starts imprinted by the soul, if you want to use that term, or I use the term psychoplasm, because psychoplasm is a Greek word which means the combination of the physical and the psychical.
Okay. The psychical?
The psychic.
Psychic, okay.
Psychical, yeah. Physical, psychical.
Okay.
So that's where the Greeks saw it.
Mm-hmm.
They saw psychoplasm as combining these two in an integral way.
Uh-huh.
And what I'm suggesting is, you know, I think one of the reasons that I want to talk about the things that I'm talking about is because people have the notion of this ethereal soul, you know, plopping down in a human body and then bringing memories and consciousness and so forth into it.
Okay.
But that's not what the evidence suggests.
Okay.
The evidence suggests that that psychoplasm or that soul body or that soul package, whatever word you want to use, imprints the developing fetus physically, mentally, emotionally, personality-wise, behavior-wise, and knowledge-wise. And all of those things are part of the evidence that we see of past lives. The reason I say you can't separate the brain from the mind, because it's all one package, is because the evidence we have is that we come into this incarnation carrying the physical features, that is the essential physical features, including scars and birthmarks and wounds from the previous life. So one of the areas of evidence for reincarnation is that we look like the human who was incarnated the last time our soul incarnated.
Uh-huh.
And if there were wounds on that body, we have a scar in the place of the wound. If there were deformities, we have some physical indication of some deformity. It may not be exactly the same deformity, although in many instances it is. Children who in a previous life had fingers chopped off of a hand are born again in a new life with missing fingers.
What if a person's born without... I don't... like scars. I don't know that I have or had any scars on my body.
Right.
Well, that doesn't mean I'm a first incoming...
Of course not. No. Typical little scars, you know, that are transitory kind of scars are not carried forward in the genoplasm,
okay.
in the genotype. But if you have, say, bullet wounds or automobile wounds, accident wounds, or other traumatic markings.
Okay.
See, traumatic is the key word.
Okay.
In other words, it involves a great deal of the psychic energy, the emotional energy of that other person.
Uh-huh.
And so when it's something that strong, it becomes part of the psychoplasm and gets carried forward into this lifetime. we have hundreds of cases of this kind of thing happening.
I just wanted to say one thing here. Just to clarify, I guess what I was doing is seeing the brain itself as a tool of the mind.
Yeah, but see, you're talking about a dichotomy.
But I didn't have these memories that came to me as I progressed here, Paul. I didn't know about reincarnation. I was 21 years old when I read the first book on it.
Sure.
And it was like light bulbs going off. It was like, oh, my God, yes, this explains so much.
Well, you see, what happened is you had in you latent memories of past lives. You had in you latent experiences and habits of past lives. They were just below the surface until you had them triggered by reading a book.
Right.
People get triggered by different things. Some people, let's talk about this a little bit, because one of the first key evidence of reincarnation is early in life, some people have spontaneous memories of that past life.
Uh-huh.
Not everybody, but everybody has them in their soul psychoplasm.
Uh-huh.
They're just below the surface. But some people come in knowing what their name was in the last lifetime, knowing something about what might have happened to them in the last days of that lifetime, knowing something about the family, knowing something about the kind of things that they did in the last life. Let's take Mozart, writing symphonies at age 4.
Right.
Well, Mozart in a past life was a musician.
Uh-huh.
He brought that forth with him. We talk about savants, people who, engage in these mathematical feats of magic, of just being able to talk about mathematics when they're 7 years old, and they get a PhD when they're 16. Well, those people in a previous lifetime had accumulated tremendous amounts of mathematical knowledge and skill that they brought forward with them, and they immediately can start accessing it. We all access our past lives, whether we know it or not.
Uh-huh.
The way you acted as a little girl, the way you defined yourself, the kinds of things that you were drawn to. You talked about gardening. I suspect that in a previous life, we can say with some degree of certainty that you were involved in gardening or farming or in food, in some important way. It's an important, significant part of your life. You didn't learn that this lifetime. You may have learned more about it. You may have deepened it and developed it. But I would suggest anything that's that important is something that carries over from lifetime to lifetime.
Yes, I agree, and I believe that.
And people who, start dancing, we've known people, a little girl, 3 years old, saying, I'm a dancer, Or we have somebody say, I'm a writer. Or we have people tell us, gee, I knew I was going to be a politician from age 5. Well, now, see, nobody taught them that they ought to be a politician.
Right.
They knew that. They expressed
they were.
It. They knew who they were and what they were. So all of us come, this doesn't mean that we live totally out of that package that we brought forward, because we learn, we change, we try new things, we experiment, we try different things to develop them, to move the whole process forward. But so memories of past lives, habits and skills that people bring forward, the ability to be physical in some sport at a very early age. I know a little 3-year-old girl who walks around on her tiptoes and holds her arms out and balances like a ballet dancer.
Yeah.
Her mother and father didn't teach her that. She knows how to do it. Her body knows how to do it. This is why I say you can't separate the body from the soul and the
uh-huh,
mind.
Uh-huh.
Because the memories are in our whole being.
Like an imprint.
Like an imprint.
Yeah.
I call it an imprint. Uh-huh. I call them soul prints.
Uh-huh.
Because it's the print of the soul in our whole being as it is. Now, we take on, it's like, water being gas, and then it turns into liquid, and then it turns into ice, and then it goes back into liquid into gas. Well, that's what, we are. We're total consciousness, and then we're in some in-between state, and then we're into a physical state, and then we switch back into in-between state and consciousness. That's why I say phenomena like reincarnation are all part of the natural system. And they're nothing magical, they're nothing metaphysical, they're nothing divine. They're just part of our natural universe. And what we've done is we've suppressed that knowledge because, you know, the institutions don't want us to know that we're really real people when we get here.
Right. Well, and of course, the religions themselves.
Oh, the religions want to deny it
exactly.
So they can keep control of us.
Exactly.
See, that. But what happens is, I was reading a study that just came out from a couple of people at Yale University the last couple of days, who were trying to figure out why children resist some of the scientific points of view in the world, and why children, they didn't talk about this, but the same principle applies, why people resist certain religious views of the world. It's because, and these psychologists were saying, well, why would they do this? Nobody had taught them. They just intuitively, instinctively, as children, started with this attitude.
Yeah.
And so I wrote on the bottom of their little study, well, you guys haven't considered that in the world of reincarnation, these kids have already had experiences to know that the scientific models that we have today and the religious models that we have today are too simplistic and too narrow. You know, that's why we don't trust them, because we know better.
Yes.
We know better because of the soul experience that we've accumulated in different realms in incarnation and out of incarnation and so on. So you can't fool the soul. You can for a short period of time. It's like, you know, Lincoln said, you can fool all people some of the time, all the people, some of the people all the time, but not all the people all the time. Well, that's the way it is about our understanding of reality. We can be, by virtue of culture and education and parental control and community, you know, indoctrination, we can be swayed off course, but instinctively we all know that we're more than we are physically. We know that the reality is more than science tells us, more than religion tells us. We know that it's a much more complicated universe. And kids talk about it. There have been other studies that, once again, they did the studies not thinking about the possibility of reincarnation, but psychologists said, gee, even young children seem to understand that when people die and animals die, that they're not really totally disappeared, that something else is there. Well, big deal. Sure, little kids know that. Because they just came from another life.
Right.
You know.
Do you, maybe I'm just asking an opinion, I don't know if you've read anything about it, but that new incoming psychoplasm or soul,
mm-hmm.
do you believe that when, or feel that when they come in fresh, that they still, there are those memories of that maybe recent, most recent or other lifetimes?
Well, the notion of coming in fresh is just one of these myths.
Yeah.
Because reincarnation says reincarnation.
To reincarnate, yes.
It means that which was before comes back again. So we bring the whole package with us, but it's just like in our own lives. I was talking to someone a day or so ago, and I said, well, why don't we remember all of that? And I said, do you remember everything you did last year? Of course not. We can't remember everything all the time. And so it's like in reincarnation. We don't remember everything from every life. You know, it's selective. It's what's most important for us at the time. But for people to say souls come in with a fresh start, you have to define that a little bit. If you mean they come in as blank slates, I think that's wrong.
Uh-huh.
If you say they come in with a new opportunity
mm-hmm.
to build on what they have been working on before and to maybe take it in some new directions, maybe to try harder in one area than they did in the past, maybe to make some adjustments so they don't make the same mistakes they made before, you know, and to make new mistakes. So every life is a new learning opportunity. It's like getting out of the eighth grade and going to the ninth grade.
Yeah, like a progression, hopefully.
It's a progression.
Hopefully, yes.
Well, it's a hopeful, I mean, that's the principle of the universe is an evolving, evolutionary expansion of consciousness and awareness of the whole and developing the capabilities to understand and to operate in the whole thing. Which is what we are supposed to be doing when we have education systems. You know, we start out and we're supposed to go each year is an expansion of your knowledge base and your awareness and your ability to function in the society. Well, reincarnation is you come back each life like you come back each year after the summer break or the Christmas vacation and you know, you pick up again. You don't do the same things you did in the seventh grade. You do some eighth grade stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But some people don't get past the eighth grade, you know. And they
right.
have to keep repeating it.
Some evidence for me, when my younger daughter was born,
mm-hmm.
I actually worried that she might be mentally retarded, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
She never cried.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, I gave her tender, loving care, and I was, you know, that. But I would watch her,
mm-hmm.
even as, I mean, I've got a picture of her at 7 weeks old lying in her bassinet. And she had her little finger up to her mouth. But she used to, I'd put her in different places so she wouldn't get bored during the day. And she'd lie there and she'd look around the room and you could see that she was thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It went on. But until she was sitting up at 5 months and progressing the way she was, I would say, oh, please, Father, don't let her be mentally retarded because she was just not like a lot of babies are. She didn't cry when she was born.
Mm-hmm.
When she, you know, came into the world. When she was 7 years old, my former husband, her father, they were on their way to Kansas City out of St. Louis going down Highway 70 to a dog show. And he said they were somewhere there on 70. And she said, Daddy, I was on this road once before. He said, yeah, we went to da-da-da. She said, no, she says, because it was dirt then. And she was riding in a carriage with horses.
Uh-huh.
And she says, but I died. How old I am right now. And Nick said that the hair just stood up on the back of his neck.
Sure.
And then he started questioning her. And then he said he felt that her answers were just not as spontaneous as when she said, I've been here before.
Right.
And it was, you know, there were horses pulling the da-da-da-da-da. And she has always had a psychic sense, very, very much so. So.
Well, we all have psychic sense. And what I'm trying to do in my writing on reincarnation is to, obviously, when we talk about evidence and we talk about cases to teach people about it, you know, we use these special cases,
yeah.
Like your daughter, you know, who, well, she had these memories and she became psychic and so on, but everyone has been reincarnated. And everyone, if they look closely enough at their own lives, they will see the footprints of the previous lives in them.
Yes.
By choices they've made that seem to be out of context. You know, not something that was expected in the family, in the community, in the school, in the church, because they're following their inner gyroscope.
Yeah.
They're following that inner rudder, if you please. And that is the accumulation of previous lives and the experiences and knowledge that we bring forward.
Yes, and if there are seven children or three or four in a family, each and every one of them will be different. With the same
Absolutely.
Upbringing, the same parents, the same environment.
And there have been many cases of twins, you know, who are clearly very different people.
Uh-huh.
And,
excuse me, we have to take a 3-minute break here.
All right.
We'll be back right after this, so please stay with us. This is wonderful. Thank you, Paul.
Good.
pledge allegiance to the King of Kings and to his kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven, one holy nation under the heavenly Father, with grace, mercy, and justice for all.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. We do not have freedom of speech because the Constitution gives it to us. The constitutional amendment was written to keep the government from taking our freedom away. The Creator gave us our rights, but He also gives us the capacity to do evil or usurp the rights of others. Our individual rights end where the rights of another begin. No one has the right to do evil because evil can never be right. Those who would seek to limit your right to speak or hear the truth are the same who seek to subjugate, control, and enslave you. Freedom is not free. Support the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network by going to firstamendmentradio.com on the internet and following the instructions there to support us. Thank you for listening.
If you read the history books, the most often asked question to Southerners was this: why did you fight? And the most often given answer is, because you're here. In other words, the South did not invade the North invaded the South.
Was it the Civil War or War of Federal Aggression? John Weaver sets the record straight in this DVD series on the Civil War from the Old Pass Christian History Conference. Was there a war to set the slaves free? Or was it a war to enslave us all? Get this DVD and judge for yourself. War of Federal Aggression. Get this DVD presentation for a donation of $25 from firstamendmentradio.com. Order online today at firstamendmentradio.com. Call 559-781-3773. The truth seems strange only because we've been indoctrinated with a fiction. War of Federal Aggression. Get it today.
Okay, folks, we're back with Paul Von Ward. As I told you, Paul is the author of God's Genes and Consciousness. He's also the author of Our Solarian Legacy. And is there another book on that, Paul?
Well, there are a couple of books, but they're out of print at the moment, can only be gotten in used condition. Dismantling the Pyramid, Government by the People, and a book called Just Solarian Legacy.
Solarian Legacy.
But the two that are in print are Our Solarian Legacy and God's Genes and Consciousness, and next year we'll have one, Soul Prints Reincarnation in Natural Science.
Beautiful. And people can get it. The website is vonward.com. Yes, Paul?
Yes, www.vonward.com.
And that's V-O-N-W-A-R-D, folks. If you go to the bottom of the main page, you'll find the publisher's link, and you can get the books there. Paul, I wanted to share with you, I had a call today from one of our listeners, and he's been listening to a lot of archives. He had heard you when you were on, and I told him you were coming on today. He says, he's the best. He says, I got his book. That's God's Genes and Consciousness.
Oh,
he says, I took it to work. And I even sneaked in some reading time at work.
Well, that's about the best review you can get, you know.
Yeah, you bet.
When somebody can do that. Well, I, as you know, Jackie, I don't fit into any box. I don't fit into mainstream science. I don't fit into mainstream religion and mainstream politics. I really have decided, at the advanced age that I am, you know, I'm going to call it like I see it, and not to try to say things that I think somebody else will like.
Right.
And if they like them, like your reader, it makes me as happy as I can be. And if they don't, well, you know, that's all right. Since I believe in reincarnation, I think we're writing for future generations. If this generation doesn't get it, at some time in the future we will.
Well, there are many that do. It was the only thing that made any sense to me, as I said. And when you talk about when we're even little, I think I shared this with you, I was such a night owl.
Mm-hmm.
And I just laid in bed at night asking questions to, quote, God. Why this and why that? Because even at that age, I was seeing things that weren't making sense to me.
Well, now, let's take that for just a moment here. In other words, you see, you're a perfect example of what I've been saying. No teacher taught you to ask those questions.
No.
No parent did that. No one in your community. And so this perspective, this mindset has to come from someplace. And what I'm suggesting is that kind of behavior, that which comes from an area or in an area where you haven't had the opportunity to learn, be taught, be indoctrinated, be conditioned, that's the legacy you're bringing forward from a previous life. And it's all very likely that you were a questioning, skeptical person, that you were an intellectual person who had to think for himself or herself, because you could have been a man in another life.
Yes.
The chances are that it's about 80% that you were female, because we tend to have the yin or yang energy predominating in, you know, many incarnations. But there are changes. And there are changes in religion, and changes in race, and changes in culture. So what we have is a world, you know, where we're all just souls who are continuing to try to get the lessons that we are going through, and it's probably more than 12 grades. It's probably pretty, for most people, hundreds of grades before we get through, and maybe we never get through. You know, maybe this is our contribution to the universe. There's a lot of speculation about reincarnation, and in my book that I'm working on, I really try to take no information, no evidence for reincarnation in general or for a specific past life connection that can't be verified by some independent person looking at the same information. So I use physical evidence in terms of photographs, in terms of body types, in terms of voice, in terms of portraits, descriptions by others of people whose lives we might have experienced in a previous incarnation. So that's the physical evidence. In terms of the mental carry forward from one lifetime to the other, I focus on things that we know that we should not have known, in other words, inherited knowledge. I focus on habits and behaviors that are with us from the beginning that we don't know where they came from. Those are things in terms of the physical evidence. I look at the mental evidence. If we take a profile of the way you think, the way you analyze, the way you synthesize, the way you solve problems, we're looking at your soul's mental capacity. In other words, it is the way that soul has evolved to think about whatever the situation is, whatever the challenge is, whatever the problem is. And if you have a particular past life that you think you might have been connected with, one of the ways we can confirm whether you're on track or not is whether or not there's a great deal of correspondence between the way you think and the way that person thought. I'll give you an example of, say, someone who, well, there's a book out called Return of the Revolutionaries written by a guy named Walter Simkew, who is alleged to be the reincarnation of the soul that was also incarnated in John Adams. And if I, as I have done, look at Walter's mental approach to things, all of the information that we have about the way John Adams thought, the kinds of things, the way he wrote, the way he spoke, those patterns still persist in recognizable form in Walter Simkew, as does the physical patterns. If we compare the facial architecture, if we compare the body type, if we look at ear form, if we look at voice, and we don't have a voice recording of John Adams, but we have descriptions of the way people talked about the way he talked. So these things correspond. Now, obviously, there are little differences, but what you do is, in the research that I'm doing, is you take a look at all of the physical evidence, how much they compare with the same person in the last lifetime, if you're trying to do a match. You take all the intellectual, mental, cognitive information, and you get as much as you can on that previous life, and you compare it. You take the personality stuff and compare it. You take the emotional sort of ego type, you know, whether you are assertive, active, dominant, whether you're submissive, timid, etc. You know, all of these things that we get on personality tests, and compare them. You look at personality style. Are you extrovert, introvert, a loner, or a cooperative team member, etc., etc., and you compare them. And what you see in all of these areas is what I call, you know, significant correspondences, or parallels, or matches, whatever word you want to use, between the two lives in each of these areas. And if you have enough correspondences in each of those areas, you can be pretty confident that this is a good match. In other words, it's very unlikely, in my view, that anybody else living today would be a better match between John Adams and life today than Walter Simkew. And when I look at other reincarnation cases, I'm working on about a dozen at the moment. Another one of them was from the Founding Fathers era. Another one was a great painter in France in the 1800s, who's now reincarnated as a Dutch person who now lives in the United States.
Is he an artist today?
Is an artist today. Has the same personality, the same physical features. He did not paint the same way. He was trying different styles in this lifetime. He has the same sort of personality type, had some of the same kinds of problems. What we're doing in talking with him and watching him is we are looking at how he has learned something and is living now longer than Paul Gauguin, who was the painter that he was at that time, lived. But they both tried to commit suicide and didn't succeed.
Wow.
There are just so many similarities.
Uh-huh.
There's a book out on The Return of Marilyn Monroe, and the author of that is a psychiatrist who's done a pretty good job. I disagree with some of his analyses, but he's done a pretty good job of showing the evidence that there's correspondences. There's a set of correspondences in each of these areas that I've talked about. And so I'm independently evaluating that case for my book to try to confirm using my more rigorous scientific method.
Uh-huh.
And what I've come up with so far is that he's correct, even though some of his methodology I don't think is very good. He has, in any event, got a match here.
Uh-huh.
And so this is just such a fascinating field, but everybody, you know, focuses on famous people, Marilyn Monroe, you know, or
right.
Paul Gauguin, and so on. And what I'm trying to do in my book and in my talks about this is that forget about those people. Think about yourself.
Right.
You know, take a look at who you are and what you are and try to see if you can stimulate in yourself insights and understandings about what you might have been in a previous life from what you are today, and understand what kinds of things you might have brought forward and what things you are trying that are new. And it puts you in a whole different mindset, you know, in terms of the way you look at yourself,
yeah,
the way you look at society, the way you look at other people, the ways, way we raise our kids. There's so many implications of this. So there are two kinds of evidence. There's general evidence of reincarnation, the kind of memories and knowledge and skill and habits and so on that we, you know, obviously couldn't have learned in this lifetime. That's evidence of reincarnation in general. But when you get to people who think they are another person in a lifetime past, then you can do this sort of corresponding matching of evidence to see whether there's a strong case or not. And I don't use, although I think people get hints from psychic readings and from channel material and from
hypnosis. How about regression?
Regression analysis may give you some hints, but I don't think it's proof.
Mm-hmm.
There are too many possibilities for contamination through the hypnotic process. Many hypnotists use very leading questions.
Oh, okay.
People go into the hypnosis already with an idea of what they think they're looking for, and that contaminates the memories that come forward. In other words, there's no way to confirm, you know,
sure,
that information. Now, what I do is to say, okay, if you get information like that, then let's see if we can confirm it. It's like Bridie Murphy, the case
right,
of Bridie Murphy. I mean, you had hypnotically recovered material, but they made an effort to go confirm it over in Ireland. The same way with other cases, where there's hypnotic material, I find that it can be a clue. It can lead the person in the direction of the research that needs to be done.
Uh-huh. Especially if they have places, dates.
Right. If you can get that, then you can confirm them. But see, what a lot of people do is they go to a psychic, and the psychic says, you were this person, that person, you know, you had five lives, and you were in Egypt and Atlantis, and, you know, you were Napoleon, and so on. And there's no way to confirm those kinds of things.
Right.
unless you happen to be given a specific enough bit of information from the psychic or channel material that you can then go back and historically confirm independently.
Uh-huh.
So I think it can be helpful, but I don't think we ought to be building our whole...
Right. No, I just wondered what you felt about it. I was thinking of the Bridie Murphy case.
Sure. Well, that's a good example because you have both. You start with some channel material or hypnotic material, and then you go to do the confirmation.
I had a past life reading, not like a psychic.
Mm-hmm.
This is when I was in the School of Metaphysics.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman allegedly was able to go into the inner levels to find that energy. Okay, but this blew me away when I thought about it, not then. She said that I had been in Spain during the Inquisition. She didn't
mm-hmm.
say Inquisition, but during that time of chaos, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And that I had been imprisoned for being falsely accused.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised
given the
kind of person you are in this
life. Well, listen to this. She said I was falsely accused of being involved in a plot to overthrow the government. And she said there were many attempts made by many people to, you know, get me free.
Mm-hmm.
But she said that their pleas fell on deaf ears,
mm-hmm.
and that the claims that were made against me were believed because I was so vocally outspoken against what the government was doing.
Yeah.
Well, Paul,
which at that time in Spain, it's the church.
Yeah. But
the church and government was...
At that point in my life, I was totally apolitical.
Mm-hmm.
And that really meant nothing to me.
Right.
Interesting, but that was it. The only thing I could relate to when the conductor asked her how I withdrew from the physical body. She said her diet was scant and wanting in nutrition,
mm-hmm.
and it was a very confined space, so I couldn't move around, so my body just gave it up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, then I got to thinking, oh, my, is that why I'm so into natural food today and eating good food? And,
sure.
And my life was spent from the time I was very active physically as a young girl in high school, played sports, cheerleading, etc. Then, at 21 years old, started working out at a fitness center. At 23, began to work there, and it was my life work.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, gee, I wonder if that's why I gravitated towards this physical type of work that I do. And there was one more thing that I found any time. If I woke up in the middle of the night and it was pitch black in my room,
mm-hmm.
my heart would just start pounding. I didn't even know what I was afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to sleep with the night light on. And
mm-hmm.
I thought, well, if I was in a prison cell, I probably had rats crawling all over me at night. It was probably pitch black. Well, I didn't think about that other part until a friend and mentor of mine was talking about the conditions today as they are here, even in the U.S. She said they're very close to what was going on before the Inquisition,
mm-hmm.
in that what they were doing was torturing people and da-da-da and stealing their property. They were confiscating personal private property.
Right, yeah.
And then she said, when she said Inquisition, I said, oh, my God, Betty, what am I doing? Because by now, I was totally involved, Paul.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Sweet Liberty broadcast, early on and through many of the years, was based mostly on the political process and what's
right.
been going on. I find myself more and more drawn to just wanting to share with our listeners the type of information we're sharing now.
Right.
Because I see that so much of the blindness in this world is because of the religions that have, like you said, withheld the information.
Yeah.
And it's for control.
Right.
But beyond that, the desire to open up minds and hearts so that there is so much more to this physical world than meets the eye. Let's put it
sure.
that way.
Well, the way I would put it is, you know, the political problems that we have today are just symptoms of the lack of awareness, lack of understanding of the bigger picture of reality that society, you know, Al Gore has this new book out, and it talks about the decline of reasoning, and although I don't agree necessarily with everything he says and so on, the point is very well taken. This society has been dumbed down over the last century.
Yes.
To the point where we really cannot deal with the political problems because we don't have the reasoning, thinking capacity in society to challenge the conditioning and the psychological manipulation that's going on. So what you're doing in your program and what I'm trying to do in my writing is really to awaken the human spirit and the human consciousness to the bigger reality so they learn the question, so they learn to look for themselves for answers and to use a critical analysis approach to information and not settle for, you know, the latest charismatic politician or the latest charismatic religious leader or
yeah.
New Age leader or workshop leader or whatever. Because we've now gotten to the point where, you know, people want to escape and just not take responsibility for the world in which we live. We're ready
there,
to follow.
And you're right that there has been so much manipulation, mind of the mind.
Absolutely.
I mean, right from the get-go with the child in school and of course, it's almost, I read a book one time, and I don't even recall the name of it, but what stood out to me is that parenting is a process of handing insanity down from one generation to the next.
Well,
as we are raised and brought up.
Well, and our education system, you see, has become a part of that. So what we're doing is not helping people to become self-learners. We are indoctrinating them to become consumers and workers in the workplace.
Yes.
See, so we're that's what we're doing in schools. And unfortunately, with both parents having to work, kids get turned over to the educational system much earlier than they used to. So the conditioning starts a lot earlier. And, you know, each generation, I mean, I'm old enough now to have seen, you know, three or four generations pass. And I tell you, we are dumbing down because of our distractions, because of the lack of the broadness of education, because of the simulation, because of the manipulation of media and the message that comes out of mainstream institutions, particularly the government, but also corporations and even scientific institutions who are so narrow-minded, and certainly the religious institutions who have their own axe to grind. So nowhere are we getting what Al Gore calls, the capacity to reason and to have a discussion about facts and truth and dialogue.
Because people aren't getting the truth.
Yeah, because they don't know. See, the sad thing is they don't know they're not getting the truth.
Yes.
See, that's where we are. It's one thing to be consciously aware, as go back to your period of Inquisition, people knew that there was a conflict of worldviews between the religious authorities and these priests and women and so on who were rejecting it and challenging it. But see, we don't have, I mean, in terms of the percentage in our society, it's very small. We don't have a large percentage of people who are even aware that they're getting manipulated.
No. And fluoride in the drinking water, it doesn't help. I mean, I think the jury's in on that.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't looked into that in terms of the scientific evidence and so on, but I think that...
It causes, according to many, many reports, it causes a passivity in people. Evidently that Soviet Union was a big user of fluoride during that time they were doing their huge laboratory experimentation on people.
Well, I'm not someone with any authority to speak on that, but I do agree with you on the point that what we have is this whole tendency, whether it's induced psychologically or from entertainment and education, this passivity, but it has it's a double-edged sword.
Yes, it is.
Because
we're out of our hour.
All right.
You'll come back in a couple months?
Yeah, let's look to August.
That would be great.
See a little bit of, get some work between now and then, and
thank
I'll look forward to talking with you then.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, VonWord.com. He's meant there at the Street Liberty website. And God's being the consciousness I look for. And I wholeheartedly urge you to
Have you seen Loose Change, the best darn documentary produced in the 911 truth movement? Why waste your money keeping up the Jones or getting stuck in plain sight when the best is free?